can take me down with just one single blow. But you don't know what you don't know. Someday I'll be living in a big old city, and all you're ever gonna be is me.
I'm Francesca, and you're listening to AM 1510 Revolution Boston. Dr. Ann Howes, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, will be joining me to discuss the very emotionally charged documentary, Bully, and how it has oversimplified the connection between bullying and suicide. Thank you, Dr. Howes, for being on Talk with Francesca today.
Thank you for asking me.
Dr. Howes, how do you feel about the documentary, Bully?
Well, I think it certainly touched on an issue that has become quite pervasive in our national consciousness, an extremely important issue around bullying. So I applaud the attention that it gives to this topic, and I think that it can potentially do a lot of good.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do have some concerns about it as well.
And what concerns do you have?
Well, I think the difficulty is not so much with the scenes in the film that that involve youth who are undergoing bullying as much as the portrayal of the link between bullying and suicide. I think that it's a very complicated relationship between the two phenomena, and I didn't feel that the film conveys the kind of complexity that those of us who really work with suicide know it to have.
And so how did you see it? How was it portrayed? For example, the boy, Tyler Long, was that his name?
Yes.
That committed suicide, was a 17-year-old boy. He had Asperger's, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Now, we know that from other information. I think it's important to point out that that is not portrayed in the film itself.
And there's a link between depression and Asperger, is that right?
Yes, that there does seem from the studies that have been done that Asperger's as well as other developmental disorders and mental disorders certainly do convey a vulnerability that really is part of the total picture.
Mm-hmm.
And without that, I don't think that we really convey a full
picture,
kind of understanding of the complexity of what's going on here.
Well, you know, what concerns me is that, you know, just, and I'm not a psychologist, but I question, you know, bullying and suicide. It just, they don't seem like they go together. Now, I'm sure that bullying causes great anxiety and depression. But what I question is that if a child is bullied, a child is upset and is consistently being bullied, I would think that would be creating anxiety. It would be creating depression.
Mm-hmm.
It would be creating a change in behavior, not wanting to eat maybe as much, wanting to go to their room more, not wanting to, do the normal activities that a child wants to do. That's just what I'm assuming,
right,
if a child is becoming depressed and anxious over a situation. Now, where would the parents be in this situation? Are they, is behind every harassed child a clueless parent, or, and that it leads them to this point? I mean, can bullying lead to suicide, really?
Well, I think that it's important to kind of unravel some of what we mean by bullying. Bullying has been used now to cover such a wide range of behaviors, and I think we need to acknowledge that some of the reports that we've all read about, you know, in the media, are describing behaviors that really might be better classified as assault or criminal behavior in one way or another. So I think that there are some real extreme cases that we have heard about. So definitely the more you know, life-threatening that this behavior becomes, the more psychological damage that's done. But in what, let's say, the general sense, I think what you're touching on, and I think you've portrayed that very, very well, the kind of psychological impacts of bullying. But those things that you say, anxiety, social isolation, depression, those can be real risk factors for suicide. So I think we want to be careful that this isn't heard as in some way discounting the very damaging influence of some bullying behavior.
The consequences of how damaging it can be.
But I think what you are hitting on is something that's really extremely important, and that has to do with, is this relationship between bullying and suicide a direct link, or is it more likely one factor, perhaps a major trigger, in an overall much more complicated picture of individual vulnerability?
Right. And I would think that depending on the foundation of the home could be a major factor in how a child deals with bullying, whether they have the courage to go to their mom and dad and say, I'm having a problem at school, someone keeps calling me names, or whatever it might be. But if they don't, if their own, let's say, for example, maybe they come from an abusive background, then they would not be as inclined, obviously, to go to the parent. So there are many factors, aren't there?
Right. Family influences are certainly there. One related aspect is that disproportionately we see that youth who are gay, lesbian, transgender, or gender nonconforming seem to be bearing the disproportionate burden of bullying. And there, that relationship with family has other complexities. I mean, youth who are struggling with sexual orientation or gender identity, regardless of what messages the family may be sending, there may be resistance there, or reluctance to really communicate about the bullying because it might open up other things that the child is not prepared to discuss.
Exactly.
So I think we have to just, I think, really recognize how complicated this issue can become.
Bullying is, you know, it seems like it is a catalyst, but for the most part, like an example, Phoebe Prince. Now, do you feel that was her suicide was based solely on bullying?
Well, you know, one thing I should say, we're always a little reluctant to, you know, without knowing all of the background in any particular case, to really draw any, you know, real definitive conclusions.
Right.
So I'm really judging only by the record that has emerged from the case. But clearly there were apparently definite vulnerabilities
like
in that young woman's life that she had shown previous inclinations to self-harm behavior, and clearly had some life stressors going on that did I think play a key role. So it's as in most cases of bullying, where that then result in or are followed by suicidal behavior, It's not always easy to place an exact degree of weight on these factors, but clearly there was much more than bullying that was going on.
But bullying can be really dangerous. I mean, there can be some very far-reaching consequences then. I mean, if kids are, there are certain children that are more vulnerable than others, then, you know, it really does need to be addressed. And
right. Absolutely.
And
it has to be addressed.
I mean, how serious do you really think this is? Do you think it's becoming more serious and really spiraling out? I mean, do you think it's as bad as it was maybe, you know, 30 years ago? I mean, when I was a kid, I don't remember any of this kind of stuff going on.
Right. I think many adults don't remember it in quite this way, certainly. So I think, yes, that there is evidence that overall in society that we've become more adversarial. And that may also be true of adult culture, you know, as well as youth.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, it does need to be taken seriously. And I think we all want to be very careful that our introducing factors that also come into play in relation to suicide is not heard as something that is intended to divert attention from the very important problem of bullying. The consequences of bullying, as you said, certainly are significant in their own right without the issue of suicide. So
absolutely.
Depression, anxiety, social isolation, exclusion, then all the behaviors that are, you know, school-based behaviors, school attendance and the disinclination to go to school for a child who's being bullied. Certainly that in itself is a major issue for schools to grapple with. So there's a great deal of harm that's coming. Also, I think that we talk about the harm and maybe see it at clearest with the targets of bullying. But those who are aggressors in as far as bullying is concerned also suffer. And I think we need to more widely recognize that bullying behavior, that kind of aggressiveness, meanness, cruelty, often is a reflection of mental health issues
exactly.
on the part of those youngsters.
Of the exactly angry children. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what about, you know, suicide and bullying? When you start to put them in the same category, isn't there the risk of kids sort of, you know, then they're bullied and they're depressed. It's like, well, this kid killed himself. And then they sort of start to identify with bullying and suicide. And then that can be very dangerous and that could become a whole public health issue. Can it not?
Yes. I mean, that's something that we are increasingly concerned with, that for some time, we've recognized something that we call suicide contagion.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, we mean imitative behavior.
Yes.
Almost always by vulnerable people. Most people, I think it's important to emphasize that most people don't become contaged by information about another's suicide. But among youth in particular, and very specifically youth who are already vulnerable, we are creating, I fear, a kind of narrative that really portrays suicide as a very widespread, normal, maybe even expected outcome of severe bullying. And I think that sends a dangerous narrative to young, vulnerable children.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Talk with Francesca, and I'm speaking to Dr. Ann Howes. Dr. Howes, what are the signs that a child is thinking about suicide?
That's a really good question, and it's something that is so important for people to recognize. Depression, anxiety, all of these things we're talking about take many, many different forms. But the key thing for a parent or any adult who works with a young person is to be very tuned in to behavioral change.
Mm-hmm.
If a young person has been generally happy, optimistic, upbeat, involved, and then begins to make change, that's something that is of real concern. So we're looking for real changes, something that is really not in the normal way that this child presents, and then that it lasts over a period of a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Generally for depression, it's a 2-week period where symptoms are obvious. But I think if parents could just focus on that notion of something is different.
Something's
about
going
this
on,
child,
yeah.
And it doesn't seem to just be a real short-term, you know, kind of moodiness.
Mm-hmm. And how would they deal with that, other than the obvious getting them some professional help?
Well, I think that the most important thing is to begin by getting help. Parents, I think, sometimes take on too much of this responsibility on their own shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And if they haven't had specific training around that, they shouldn't expect that they are going to have the solution, any more than if you noticed your child was running a high fever.
Right.
You know, we wouldn't let it go on and on and think that somehow we should figure it out. Our first impulse is to get that child to a physician. And I think it's that same kind of behavior that we'd like to really communicate to parents. Family physicians are an excellent source
mm-hmm.
of information and referral.
Mm-hmm.
So taking the child to a pediatrician or to a family doc and really just sharing these concerns can be a very helpful first start.
Is there a genetic link to those that commit suicide? Like, Sylvia Plath committed suicide, so did her son. I mean, as well as a number of others whose parents had committed suicide. So I'm just wondering whether or not some children are more biologically, you know, there's a more of a biological element to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly when we really look at the results of decades of research on genetic linkages, we see very, very clearly that there are changes to the brain in people with serious mental disorders. These can be picked up by neuroscientists, and I think they are very real. So the notion of genetic vulnerability is something that we know less about when it comes to young people. Most of this work is done by actual post-mortem analysis of brain tissue. And it's been very difficult to get families whose young daughters and sons have died by suicide to really be willing to donate the brains of suicide victims for research purposes. So most of this work is being done on adult brains, but it's striking when you you look at what this kind of research is producing.
Do you think that when children want to commit suicide, they give you enough warning other than noticing their behaviors? I mean, do you feel that there are things that you can see that they're asking for help?
That can happen. However, I think the another piece of this in youth is impulsivity.
Mm-hmm.
Youth tend to act much more rapidly. They can go from changes in mood more quickly than is typically evident in an adult. So I think it really can be a somewhat elusive kind of thing. Right. Certainly, we have certain classic symptoms that that really are clear warning signs. Mm-hmm. If the child seems preoccupied around death, talks or thinks about, and expresses themselves around death, or self harm, those are clear warning signs. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, in the absence of those signs, we really cannot always take comfort. There's sometimes are cases where no one has seen those signs.
Dr. House, where can parents find information so that when they start to, sometimes parents can be afraid to look at certain things,
Absolutely.
And so, easy enough to say, well, bring them to the family physician, but in their minds, they may not want to deal with that. Oh, no, that's not my kid. Mm-hmm. Or no, that's not really happening. That's too frightening to them.
Right.
Rather than maybe go that step, that maybe they can't take that step, but maybe they mm-hmm. can look online. I mean, there's just, with the internet today, there's just so much information. It just seems like how can you let something like this even happen?
Right. Well, I would suggest that go to a reliable source. Mm-hmm. I think the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is one such source. A resource that we've found to be very helpful with for parents is a film that we've produced over the last couple of years that's called More Than Sad, Teen Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows the cases of four youngsters, all of whom were clinically depressed, but they show very different faces of depression. And this short film, it's very helpful for parents.
And where can they find this? On your website?
Yes, they can find it on the AFSP.org.
Can you give us those letters one more time?
More than sad.
Teen depression. Okay, and it's on
the... The film can be ordered right from our online store. Another very good source of information is the Suicide Prevention Resource Center, or SPRC, which is located in Newton, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And their website, which is sprc.org, also has excellent resources. Articles that are designed for lay audiences.
Mm-hmm.
They have, for example, a very, very good white paper that can be downloaded directly from their website on bullying and suicide. That's really very, makes the research very accessible to people without a research background. So I think that those, between AFSP and SPRC, mm-hmm. I think that parents can find much there in terms of information.
Okay. All right, Dr. House, is there anything that you'd like to tell our listeners before we say goodbye that I might have missed here, as long as I have you on the phone?
I really applaud you, Francesca, for talking about this. I think this is just a very important thing. We've really are in a very compelling national conversation, and I really invite your audience to learn as much as they can, and please use those of us who are mm-hmm. in the field and as a resource. We would love to play as much of a role as we can in just getting out mm-hmm. the information.
Okay. Dr. Ann Huss, thank you so much for being on Talk with Francesca today.
Thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you want to know more about what's ahead on Talk with Francesca, you can visit my website at talkwithfrancesca.com and click on upcoming shows. And of course, if you missed some of the show today, it'll be posted on my website as it always is. You don't have to wait until next week to contact me. Send me an email at host@talkwithfrancesca.com. You can also visit me on Facebook and you can send me a tweet. Don't forget the new time, 7 a.m. on Saturday mornings and streaming at 3 p.m. on Sundays. Thanks for tuning in. Have a fantastic week. And as always, I hope I gave you something to talk about. Don't try, sir.